Welcome to the Editapod, a podcast about, what else? The Editorat. I'm your host, Josh Edge. This year, Alaska Public Media and KNOM Radio and NOM are teaming up to try something new. We're going to be doing one of these podcasts each week ahead of the last great race. Then, God help us, we're going to switch over to a daily podcast, and we will have a new episode out every morning. The idea is you can wake up, brush your teeth, make your coffee, and get caught up on everything that's happened in the last few hours on the trail. I don't know how you're listening to this right now, but the best thing to do is subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, whatever podcatcher app you use, and that will ensure that you get the new episodes delivered right to your phone as soon as they're done. With me throughout the Odyssey ahead are the two reporters who will be out covering the race from the ground. Ben Matheson is going to be working for KNOM, following the front of the pack.
Hey, Josh.
And Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes, well, he's going to be there too.
Hey. Happy inaugural podcast, you guys.
Indeed. So today, I thought we would take a look back at the Kuskokwim 300. And for those of you that don't know, that's a sled dog race out of Bethel, and it's described on their website as the premier mid-distance sled dog race in the world, and probably described as one of the toughest races in the world.
Everybody calls their sled dog race the toughest in the world.
Ben, you're on the trail this year, so tell us a little bit about the K300. What's it all about?
Well, in simple terms, the Kuskokwim 300 runs up the Kuskokwim River from Bethel to Aniak and back. It's one of the first chances to see the top mushers before the Iditarod, before the Yukon Quest, and you get to see what teams look like in really some extreme, often extreme conditions. You always get a great field. There's Iditarod champions in the mix. There's past champions from the K300 and some Western Alaska mushers. It's also a good celebration of YK Delta mushing. Besides the K300, there's two smaller races, which are pretty big events in their own, the Bogus Creek 150 and the Akiak Dash.
So you mentioned a lot of Iditarod mushers are in there. Obviously, that's one of the reasons we're taking a look back at the K300. What mushers are we talking about? Who do we see?
In this year's race, we had 20 mushers. Among those, several past champions, including those with 13 victories. Jeff King has been absolutely dominant in the past. He's got 9 titles over the past 3 decades. Also past champions, Ramey Smith, Pete Kaiser, and Paul Gebhardt. You get Yukon Quest champions, Brent Sass and Hugh Neff. You've got 2 Mackeys, Patrick and Jason, running this year. And a few Western Alaska mushers as well, Jackie Larson, Pete Kaiser, Richie Deal, and Mike Williams Jr. from Akiak. Part of the reason is that this race brings a pretty hefty purse, a total of $150,000. The winner brings home $25,000.
And Ben, this is a couple weeks ago. What were the dates? Because we're recording after it all wrapped up.
The race started on Friday, January 20th, and runs through that Sunday morning.
All right, well, why don't you set the stage for us? Starts on the Friday, the 20th there in Bethel.
One thing you never know with the Kuskokwim 300 is what the trail is going to look like leading up to the race. I personally don't even pay attention to the weather until a couple, 3 days before the race. This year, there was very low snow conditions, almost no snow, glare ice, ugly ice until the Thursday before the race. And that's when, 8, 10 inches plus dropped on the Kuskokwim River. So we switched gears from having this kind of glare ice. The race starts Friday evening. It's a big event on the frozen Kuskokwim in front of Bethel. You get dozens or hundreds of pickup trucks, and folks are out here in bitter freezing cold. It's 25 below and a little bit of wind in Bethel. Upriver, it's 40 below. So we've got a very frigid race. Dogs have coats on, and it's a classic Kuskokwim 300.
You know, this year it sounds like the weather came really late, but I mean, was there any question of whether the K300 would even happen this year? I mean, I know there's been races in the past where there was overflow and maybe like rain with above freezing temps, but with like a breakup in November, I mean, you know, is it even safe?
In 2014, we had a breakup in November and then a really jumbled ice freeze up, but the Kuskokwim has really good trail crews from all along the villages. And there's always a trail in some fashion. The Kuskokwim 300 gets delayed. It gets rerouted. But I don't think the Kuskokwim 300 gets canceled. It runs.
All right, so mushers take off from Bethel. First stop, Tulluksac. What happened?
So we're watching Jesse Holmes. He was the first musher to leave Bethel at the front, and he acted as the rabbit for this first 50 stretch going upriver. He was a bit of a wild card. He's run the Kusko once before back in 2014. but we haven't seen him much in the YK region. But he's running this absolutely blistering pace, 27 minutes in front of the competition, going up to Tulaksak.
So Jesse Holmes takes off at a pretty crazy pace. What other kind of strategies are playing out?
One of the beauties of the K300 is its simplicity. Over these 300 miles, there's only 10 hours of rest. Four of those hours have to take place in Tulaksak on the way down right before the finish. The remaining 6 hours can be split up however the mushers would like in the checkpoints of Kalskeg going up, Aniak at the turnaround point, and then Kalskeg going down. There's a million ways to mess up on the K300 if you blow out your team too early or if you really push those 10 hours of rest to the max. But it's really a compressed Iditarod, simplified strategy, and it all plays out at a blistering pace.
Ben, I don't know if this says more about you or about dog mushing or about the K300, but for anyone to describe 10 hours of rest as a simplified version of events is pretty extreme. Covering that much distance and basically not resting when it's 30 below before the wind chill is, I don't know if simple is what I would go for.
The mushers describe it often in understated terms, but they will say that it is one of the toughest races in all of sled dog racing. There's no rest.
It's called the toughest. It's not the only 300-mile race. I mean, I'm thinking of the Copper Basin 300, the Northern Lights 300, the Willow 300 is happening right now. I don't hear those described as, comparably tough. And I'm just curious if it's about the pace that racers are beholden to on the K300 or if it's more about the location itself.
Well, the Kuskokwim has a lot of wide open spaces where you get big winds coming off the coast. It's a place where there's many different trails where if you don't have disciplined leaders, the dogs may want to take some local mushing trails. Some have compared it a little bit to the coastal conditions where it's just wide open, icy, tough, and you really have to rely on tough leaders on typically a fast, flat river trail. So the pace is breakneck, and the competition ensures so.
And right after Tulaksak is Kalskeg.
The order going into Kalskeg goes Jesse Holmes, Ray Reddington Jr., and then Brent Sass. So that's 4 o'clock in the morning. It's after this really fast run overnight. It's 40 degrees below zero. So these first front guys stay 3 hours. Pete Kaiser comes in the fourth position, and he's going at a good pace within 5 or 6 minutes of those fastest guys. So the next few settle in for a bit, Pete Kaiser, Paul Gebhardt, and Mike Williams Jr., plus Richie Deal. And these guys stay 4 hours. So it's early, but they've run, 10 hours straight overnight, and they've used, 2/3 of their discretionary rest.
All right, Ben. So the mushers start Friday night in Bethel. They've gone to Tulaksak. They've gone to Kalskeg. Next stop, Aniak.
So this is midday Saturday. Teams have already gone, over 100 miles through freezing cold temperatures up to Aniak. We're starting to wonder really who Jesse Holmes is. He's been racing at the front of the pack. He's won the Yukon Quest 300 last year, and that's no small accomplishment. You have to beat Ali Zirkel and Ryan Olson. He's a reality TV show star. He's on the National Geographic show Life Below Zero. He left his home of Alabama, according to the internet, at age 16, jumping freight trains up to Alaska. And KYUK's Adrian Wagner had a chance to speak with him during his 11 minutes that he spent in Aniak.
You're way out front. How are you feeling?
Oh, I don't know if I'm way up front. Brent's back there somewhere, so I've seen him across the lake a few times, so I'm feeling good.
Yeah, I'm so just, you think you can keep this pace up?
Oh, I don't know if I can keep the pace up. I got some young leaders. I got their dad at home. He had a sore back, so, I wish he was here, but they're going to learn anyways. Mm-hmm. And, we're not going to learn nothing by not pushing ourselves. Mm-hmm. So just try to keep them hydrated and, not push too hard that I don't take that to be my priority.
I have two questions from that tape. The first, he mentioned hydrating, and there's that water sound in the background. Was he watering the dogs? Is that what that sound was?
Yeah, that was at the checkpoint in Aniak, the checkpoint at the school, and I think he's drawing water for his team there.
Two, I just want to get the course of events right. So you guys had a reality star from Alabama who hopped trains, and you were just figuring that out as he was breaking in the lead?
He lives in Nenana. He's got a trap line. He's been up in Alaska for a long time, but he's a bit of a wild card on the Delta.
So while Adrian Wagner from KYUK there was talking to Jesse Holmes, Brent Sass, if I remember correctly, he blew right through the checkpoint, didn't he?
Both Jesse and Brent blow right through, but we do have a few mushers who stayed, you know, an hour in Aniak there, including two-time defending champion Pete Kaiser, and Adrian Wagner snagged him for a brief moment.
I kind of figured it wouldn't warm up that much. It was probably 40, 50 below the whole way up from Bethel to Kelskeg last night, so not surprised that it's...
So how was that? Is the first night the most difficult? Is it all easy street from here?
No, it actually gets a little tougher as we go. It's a little less rest and a long haul back to Bethel.
And I'm especially interested to hear what Richie Deal, he's one of our local guys who lives there in Aniak, trains in cold temperatures. Adrian had a chance to speak with him as he spent his 1 hour there.
It's going pretty good. It's cold.
And we get our initial first-hand trail report from Richie.
And how about this snow?
I really like it. It makes this 40 below feel a little better.
And Ben, as I understand it, Jeff King had some dog issues outside of Aniak?
Well, we did get a report that Jeff King lost two of his dogs. His two leaders just were able to disconnect from the gang line. And Jeff King didn't know this as he was going downriver from Aniak down to Kelskeg. But there was a man in a truck who found these two loose dogs. He took those down to the checkpoint in Kelskeg. And Jeff was sort of left to wonder for a little while the condition of his dogs. But he was fortunately safely reunited with his two lead dogs downriver in Kelskeg.
And that's not normal, right? Like, that's not normal in dog sled races. And in the K300, like, that's not a normal thing, right?
Dogs get loose. It's not the first time in my brief history with K300 we've had loose dogs. But I guess it's not something you hear about with Jeff King very often. What we heard from Jeff is that he called for his leaders to pick up the pace a little bit, and those lead dogs had the strength in them to give a good tug. And Jeff says they just took off and disconnected and were off into the darkness.
Yeah, definitely a little different circumstances than we usually hear about with dogs getting loose in the Iditarod. It's usually as people are, you know, hooking up or disconnecting their teams or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, or somebody will take a tumble from a sled and get bucked off, and the team will keep going. And so the whole team is sort of together, and that'll be recovered. But, I'm not as long in the tooth, certainly, as a lot of people on, competitive mushing. But, I have two dogs just kind of breaking loose. That's newsworthy.
So, Ben, at this point, how's the race going? How is it shaping up?
At this point, we've got divergent rest strategies. It's like in the Iditarod when you've got folks taking their 24-hour rest in one spot and other people jumping ahead. As the race moves back downriver to Kelskeg, we do get a much better sense of who's in front, who's got to take more rest, and what the race actually looks like right now. So Kelskeg Saturday evening, we've got Brent Sass, who's first into Kelskeg. He's an hour and 25 minutes in front of Pete Kaiser, who we're watching pretty closely. He's followed by Jesse Holmes, Ray Reddington Jr., Pete in the fourth position, and then Richie Deal. So the first three actually have to do 3 hours of rest here to make their total of six. Pete and Richie only have to do 1 hour. So at 7:45 Saturday evening, we see Pete Kaiser, who leaves the Kelskeg checkpoint, and for the first time in the race, he's at the front of the pack. Brent Sass departs the checkpoint 34 minutes later.
The musher's next stop is Tulaksak. They have to take another 4 hours of mandatory rest, and KYUK caught up with Pete Kaiser while he was spending some time there.
I got about an hour of sleep, and it takes a little while, at least for me, to when you wake up from that, to kind of get your bearings straight and have a little time to just kind of sit there and have a cup of coffee or whatever. So I usually don't like to wait until the last minute to get up. Just give myself a little bit of time to get my head straight before I leave. So I got about an hour's worth of sleep and then got up and a cup of coffee and a little bit of water. And now we'll probably throw our stuff on and go out.
So Pete had 34 minutes on Brent Sass leaving Kelskeg. Brent had a really solid run, and he cut that down to 20 minutes. So Pete's got that 20-minute edge, and he's got to run 50 miles back home to Bethel.
So they have 50 miles to go, and they're only 20 minutes apart?
This is almost an exact rematch of last year. The buffer was a little bit bigger, but again, it's coming down to that chase. It's Brent Sass trying to chase Pete Kaiser.
I got about an hour of sleep, and it takes a little while, at least for me, to when you wake up from that, to kind of get your bearings straight and have a little time to just kind of sit there and have a cup of coffee or whatever. So I usually don't like to wait until the last minute to get up. Just give myself a little bit of time to get my head straight before I leave. So I got about an hour's worth of sleep and then got up and a cup of coffee and little bit of water, and now we'll probably throw our stuff on and go out.
And I know this goes without saying, but when I hear that tape, the only thing I can think of is he sounds so tired. Are they all that way at that point? Like, is everybody just completely depleted and just monomaniacally focused?
Mushers are pretty tired by that point, but they never give you an indication. They never complain. It's all business. Those 4 hours in Tuluksac fly by. 75% of that's dog care, maybe 10 winks over the course of 45 minutes. Pete's always cool as a cucumber before the finish, but he's got a huge run in front of him.
How long is a wink of sleep?
I think it's about 4 minutes. If I did the math correctly, it's one wink. Is that right?
Exactly. We've got 50 miles from Tuluksac down to Bethel. Dogs are running home. Pete Kaiser's got 20 minutes, a 20-minute edge in front of Brett and Sass, and he spoke with KYUK about his strategy.
There's not a whole lot of strategy from here on out. It's just kind of who has the most gas left in the tank for this final run home. So.
That's Pete Kaiser. And 20 minutes behind Pete is Brent Sass in chase mode.
We had a great run over here. The dogs were moving along nice. I'm probably going to drop one more here just because you don't want to have to carry anybody in the last stretch. You want to be as efficient as possible. And one was having a hard time. I carried him into here because he was having a hard time keeping up with the speed. So I'll probably drop one more. And, yeah, it's going to be a fight to the finish. We're all about 20 minutes apart, it looks like. So it's going to be a good finish.
Now, Brent's in the second position. In the third position is one of the local guys, Richie Deal, who's looking to make a move.
I don't think there's any real strategy now. I mean, we've all, played our cards right to get here where we are at this point, and now it's just 50 miles of trail left.
We got three guys. They're off their rest. They're speeding towards Bethel. Pete's got a little bit of a lead over Brent, who's got a little bit of a lead over Richie, but they're all super close with like 50 miles to go. Who gets there first?
Let's find out.
Congratulations, Pete, for your third win.
Thank you.
How did it go?
It was cold, but really nice trail with the snow. I think the cold was the only issue.
A big local hometown crowd came out to welcome Pete back home to Bethel. He spoke with KYUK's Angela Denning, who asked him if there was a point in the race where he knew he may have the victory.
When we left Tuluksac, the dogs looked really good, and we were on step within a few miles, and I could feel the power in the handlebar, and I kind of knew at that point if we could keep that going, we were going to have a hard time catching us. So, but as far as knowing you're going to win, not until you get here. So, he's a heck of a competitor. I knew he'd be coming after us.
And then in a repeat of 2016, we get Brent Sass, last year's runner-up, coming in 46 minutes later.
Yeah, that's good. Same as last year.
Yes.
Behind Pete. How far ahead is Pete?
46 minutes is the exact answer to that. And Brent Sass, as per tradition, came in a good mood.
Dogs did great. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it thoroughly. We're happy to be here, though. How far back is Richie? I thought for sure he was going to be right on my tail.
He's not.
Okay.
He's a little ways back.
That's good.
Did you have to work to pull away from him?
I've been working for 300 miles, but I've been kicking and pulling the whole way, partially for myself, keeping myself awake, and then also to help the dogs, too. So it's part of my style. But I felt like I needed to. These guys in their home turf advantage, the dogs know where they're going. I have a few.
And then coming in third place with his best K300 finish was Aniak's Richie Deal.
The core group, my dog, they're getting a little older and better at it. I could ask for much more, but they're pretty darn good this year.
Richie Deal spoke with KYUK's Angela Denning.
What did you learn this year?
That I can relax a little more when there's some snow. And the dogs can relax and don't have to be, steered around everywhere. It's just nice having snow for once. I think Pete and I were talking about it this morning, and it's the first first like fully snow covered trail we've had in the 8 Cuscos that I've done, so that's pretty good.
After Richie, in 4th place was Ray Reddington Jr., and Jesse Holmes rounded out the top 5.
Ben, how many K300s have you covered?
This has to be my 4th or 5th in some capacity. This is the 3rd one that I've been out in Bethel to cover.
And how, compared to the last ones, I mean, how did this one compare for you?
It's always tight going into Tulexac. There's always a chase. It's Roan Boozer, Pete Kaiser, Jeff King. There's always that close finish at the end. So it's always tight until a finish.
And I'm just curious because I reported from the trail. You've reported from the trail in different ways, or from some trail in different ways. And where were you posted up? Like,
for this year, I was posted in Bethel, and KYUK has got a pretty impressive trail crew where there's reporters in Kalskeg, in Tulexac, in Aniak, also along the trail a little bit for some of the other races, but I was posted there in Bethel.
Do you feel like the weather made a difference in the race? I mean, compared to some of the more recent years, between how cold it was and recent snow, like, did that change people in Bethel and out along the river, their sort of enthusiasm for the race? Did it feel like that made a difference to anyone but the mushers?
Well, I've seen a few of the Pete Kaiser victories. This was his 3rd victory in a row. Pete always brings out a big crowd. There's that core group of YK Delta mushers that have really carved out a position at the front of the pack. So there's always that enthusiasm. There's also 2 other races that take up a lot of attention and a lot of activity over the course of that weekend, the Bogus Creek 150 and the Akiak Dash. It's just all out all weekend.
And Ben, I've got one more K300 question for you. How'd Jeff King do?
Jeff King's still looking for number 10, and this year he came in the 9th position.
I have a question, Ben. Did you sleep at all?
This is, like I said, I've done the K300 a few times, so I know there's a few hours both Friday and Saturday night that you can carve out sleep, so I slept.
Great. Well, thanks for the recap of the Kuskokwim 300, Ben.
Thanks, Josh.
So let's take a step back now, take a look at some of the longer-term mushing trends. What I'm really interested in here is the division between the rural mushers and the urban mushers.
And we should point out, for maybe anyone who's not super familiar with Alaska, that when we say, you know, rural and urban, urban really means places where the road system goes.
And by rural, off the road system, obviously, meaning places like Nome, Bethel, Kotzebue.
Yeah, and even Southeast Alaska, too, although there's not not a ton of mushing in Southeast Alaska that I know of.
I believe if you're a cruise ship passenger, you can get an on-land ride in Skagway.
Totally. There, and then also what a lot of mushers will do is they'll rent their teams out to some of the crews that stage on glaciers in the summer. And you can fly out, I think, a lot of the times in a helicopter and go out for a few hours and get taken around on a glacier with sled dogs. So there is some mushing in Southeast Alaska. Not a ton of Iditarod champions come from Southeast. In fact,
it's the subject of a different podcast.
Yeah.
So, Zach, about a year ago, I think you did a news piece on different factors, different conditions driving mushers from the rural areas, the off-the-road system areas, into communities on the road system to train for races like the Iditarod, the Yukon Quest, the K300 even.
Yeah. So this is not, you know, a brand new thing. This is something that's been happening for decades. And this piece is a year old, but I was listening back to it as I was getting ready for this year's Iditarod and race season. And I think a lot of the stuff holds up. One thing to update, though, is there's an appearance in the story by Pete Kaiser, who we obviously heard from while Ben was recapping the K300. And in the piece, it mentions that he'd won the K300 2 times. Obviously now, a year later, that's 3 times.
Great. Well, let's take a listen to the piece when it aired originally on Alaska News Nightly.
Sunlight spills between thick stands of birch trees in Nenana as Iditarod rookie Tom Jamgoshian shovels up the dog lot.
Well, I live in Nome, Alaska, and I came down here taking 3.5 months off of work to train for the Iditarod.
Jamgoshian is a lawyer for the state and, just for the record, a personal friend. Though he started his kennel in the bush, this is the 2nd year that he's come onto the road system as part of his attempt at the Iditarod.
Snow conditions out in Nome are pretty unreliable, and it's a lot cheaper to fly out here to run qualifying races and shorter races and heck of a lot cheaper to get food and meat.
A pallet of dog food that costs $100 delivered by road to Nenana could be up to $900 carried by barge to Nome. And not only are coastal snow conditions hard to predict, but storms often wipe out training trails overnight.
If I was doing this on my own in Nome, I'd be spending half my time on a snow machine just keeping the trails in shape.
Here in Nenana, Jim Goshen is training under conditions that allow him to maximize his time on the sled, practicing his long-distance routines. He's renting a small cabin on property owned by a top musher with long roots in competitive sled dog racing.
I'm Aaron Burmeister, of course, born and raised in Nome, Alaska, born around the Iditarod and involved in it since childhood.
The Burmeister family helped get the race off the ground in its early years, and Aaron's young son, Hunter, is being brought up close to the kennel with a hardy outdoor lifestyle. As we're talking, Hunter shows off handfuls of dry moss gathered for a bonfire later on.
Well, thank you, son. Okay, you hold on to it for me.
The sled dog racing that Hunter's learning, though, is radically different from the small teams and recreational outings that his dad grew up with in the 80s.
And as a child, my parents would throw caribou hides in the sled, throw me in my parka in a sleeping bag, and send me out on the trail in the basket with them.
The demands and expense of competitive mushing are reshaping earlier traditions. In this year's Iditarod, 52 of the entrants from Alaska list their homes as communities on the road system. Just 9 are from the bush. And even then, several are like Burmeister and Jam Goshen, who spend winters training on the roads. Burmeister still spends part of his year in Nome, but he started training in Nenana shortly after college when he began competing more seriously and needed to raise his kennel operations to the next level.
If I had a choice, I'd live out in the bush forever and stay off the road system away from all the headaches. But it's more affordable and more accessible when you're on the road system.
We're interrupted when Burmeister gets a call from another musher.
Bear with me for a second. That's Pete. Okay. Hello. How far out are you, bro?
Pete is Pete Kaiser of Bethel, who won his second consecutive Kuskokwim 300 just last month. He's trained with Burmeister the last few years and just bought property nearby. Kaiser and another musher from Aniak, Richie Deal, are approaching the kennel for a short rest in the middle of a training run and are able to check in with Burmeister by cell phone from the runners, taking advantage of the 4G network in the area. Another Braille Belt perk. Some of the factors driving mushing onto the road system are external, increasingly variable weather and the higher cost of living in the bush. But internally, the sport is also speeding up every year, with more refined, regimented training strategies becoming commonplace. One of the reasons that large, healthy teams can make the 1,000-mile trip to Nome in less than 9 days is because of the fanatically focused dietary regimes that mushers like the Seavies, Boozers, and Burmeister feed their elite breeds.
Your typical competitive Iditarod racing dog today is burning 12 to 15,000 calories per day while they're on the trail. Now, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, you could feed dogs fish and you'll be just fine. But 1 pound of fish, you're averaging 1,800 calories. 1 pound of a premium power product that is being fed today in Iditarod is 42 to 4,400 calories.
Burmeister came in third last Iditarod, but is taking this year off to spend more time with his family. He wants a first-place finish, but beyond year-to-year battles to win the race, he's invested in a longer campaign.
Yes, I'm competitive, very competitive. My goal is to win the Iditarod. But this sport wouldn't thrive, it wouldn't survive without up-and-comers like Pete and Richie and Tom and all these mushers that are getting into the sport is what keeps the sport successful. And my goal is to promote not just myself. I focus more on promoting the sport and promoting mushing.
In Nenana, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
And back in Anchorage, Zach, I have one question about that piece. What was Aaron Burmeister's ringtone?
I believe that was Walking in Memphis by Mark Cohen. I had to look that up myself.
Nice reporting. So also in that story, there was mention of qualifying races. What's that mean?
So to qualify for the Iditarod, which is a lot of people's goal, you have to do qualifying races. These are races that are kind of recognized as legitimate. And you have to do basically the equivalent of about 750 miles in order to be eligible to run in the Iditarod. So as we're taping this, the Willow 300 is just starting. The Yukon Quest is about to kick off. Within the last week, there's been the Tustamina 200 on the Kenai Peninsula, the Northern Lights 300 from Big Lake. These are all qualifying races for the Iditarod. And so Essentially, there's a bunch of these middle distance races, and I'd add to that the K300, except that you can't drive there, and most of the others you can. And that makes a big economic difference for people that are trying to get ready for the Iditarod. You know, instead of flying your dogs out to Bethel, as you would in the bush, on the road system, you really, like, every weekend can kind of drive to Willow, drive to Big Lake, and these kind of mid-distance qualifying races, these are a big part of that ecosystem. And it helps if you can drive the dog truck there.
Yeah, and that's a lot of – there's a lot of races, not a lot of time, all kind of gearing up for the Iditarod there.
I would say that's fair. There's only a couple of months of qualifiers. I mean, a lot of them are clustered around January and February, because after that, people are really starting to get ready for the Iditarod. And after March, you know, there's another qualifier out in the bush in Kotzebue, the Kobuk 450.
440.
The 440. It was the Paul Johnson 450.
Correct.
Out of Unalakleet that no longer exists, to my knowledge. But so there's not a ton of these races in Alaska, and you're right, they are kind of compressed around the same couple of weeks, and they even step on each other's toes a little bit.
You also refer in that piece to variable weather in bush Alaska. What do you mean by that?
I mean climate change by that is kind of the short answer. In a lot of the subarctic and coastal parts of western Alaska, global warming is having a really dramatic effect on the environments that used to be really just extremely consistent and dependable. So, you know, one year it might be 30 below for the K300, but I'm sure, as Ben could tell you, the year before that there might have been open water along the river.
That's referred to as a Cusco swim, Zach.
Is that true?
It is, yes.
So, you know, on top of that, snow conditions, the level of sea ice in a lot of the coastal communities, all of that stuff has been fluctuating a lot. And so it's really hard for mushers to know whether there's going to be good conditions to train in a given winter. In the fall, you'll have people that are working their dogs on ATVs or on trucks. And, you know, they're trying to put miles on the dogs. They're trying to get them stronger. But all of that is really just sort of conditioning for how the dogs are going to behave on snow, on the runners. You know, by contrast, a lot of the interior areas like Fairbanks and Nenana, there's a lot more consistency. And even in an area where the snow hasn't been great, you still have the option on the road system of just putting your dogs in a truck and driving to a place where there's better snow.
So, Zach, groceries are more expensive in the bush. Gas is more expensive. But how is mushing dogs more expensive in the bush?
That's a good question. The short answer is everything's more expensive in the bush. And in that piece, Aaron kind of talked about food, and he mentioned what are called premium power products. Those are basically like composite foods that are designed for sled dogs to balance, you know, proteins, fats, sort of like a meat smoothie for the dogs. And just all the good stuff that they want is just all in one place. And it's a really, really tremendously dense caloric load. And those are the kinds of things that people buy that make a major difference in the kind of top echelons of competitive mushing. You want these things that just are going to just infuse your dogs with a bunch of high octane motor oil and get them going. But those are things that you have to buy with money. And if you buy it with money, whether it's kibble or whether it's a premium power product, it has to be flown in or barged in. And then you're dealing with transportation logistics that are factored into the cost. And that just means it's cheaper in any place that a road goes. So by contrast, years and years ago, when there was a lot more of a presence of mushing in the bush, people were feeding their dogs a lot more salmon. And that was fine because the dogs weren't running a 9-day Iditarod and just kind of going through calories like as quickly. So fish was fine. And, you know, there was more fish to be had. And you could kind of just feed your team that way with the fruits of your labor. Now that's just a lot harder. There's just more of the diet for competitive sled dogs that's kind of coming from the cash economy.
I think that is a good place to stop for today. Next week, we're going to be talking about the Yukon Quest, the other 1,000-mile sled dog race. Again, subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or Stitcher. We're going to be releasing new episodes on Thursdays the next few weeks until the race starts on March 4th. Thanks to Alaska Public Media and KNOM Radio for making the Iditapod an actual thing, and thanks to Ben Matheson and Zachariah Hughes for joining me. Till next time, I'm Josh Edge. Goodbye.